So I don't at all look forward to the death of Joseph Ratzinger. I don't. Or any other pope. Not really. Except for one tiny reason which I ought to confess and share with you. When he dies, there's quite a long interval till the conclave can meet. Maybe Cardinal Law will still be on it to pick another pope. Sometimes it goes on for months till they get the white smoke. And for that whole time, that whole interval, it's a delicious, lucid interlude, there isn't anyone on earth who claims to be infallible. Isn't that nice? All I want to propose in closing is this, that if the human species is to rise to the full height that's demanded by its dignity and by its intelligence, we must all of us move to a state of affairs where that condition is permanent. And I think we should get on with it. Okay, thank you for having me.
I don't know about you guys, but I still miss him.
Yeah, would have liked to have a scotch with the man.
Yeah. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. I haven't shared a scotch with, but we did share a nod.
Indeed.
We nodded at each other once because we were at the American Jewish University where he was doing, where they were doing one of his last panel discussions. And I was lucky enough, thanks to local, community folks, to go. Not only to go, but to go to the after party. And when I went, he was going through chemo. He just got inundated. Like, everybody, he's like, I'm not going to do that. He's clearly not feeling well. I'm not going to do that. So I just, shared a nod. He nodded back, and I was pretty good. Again, this is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam. With me is Dan. How you doing?
Pretty good, man. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you, Becky?
I'm great, Sam.
Great. So as the quote suggests, we are now in that delicious interlude between people who claim to be infallible. And I think what he ended that quote with is really kind of the important point to me. And it brings me to an article or a column that we recently heard. In an article on The Week, Damon Linker, who's known for writing things critical of the theocratic bent among certain conservatives, wrote some things about the Atheism Visibility movement within the context of A.C. Grayling's The God Argument, which is due out later this month, so I don't know what's in it. The arguments that he makes are arguments that we've all heard. And to be honest with you, these are arguments that I like discussing versus the arguments which are... Jesus says you're a fool and you're going to burn for all eternity if you don't do what he says. This is a much more philosophically, and, it's an argument that comes from different sources, not just the Bible. But I still think it's wrong. And to give you a sort of a pre-refutation of what I'm going to read, the argument reads like, now that there's no religion, what do we do about all the problems that religion was invented to justify its existence? Is really what this feels like.
Wow, that's a that's a really odd question. It sort of reminds me of some research that was done a couple of years ago where they were trying to figure out what to do about cancer, and so they turned HIV against it.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of the same thing. It's like, well, we've got all these problems, so let's start some religious problems to overwhelm the other problems.
Sounds good. So let's go into the article a little bit. And he says, does the world really need another new atheist manifesto? Do the efforts of Sam Harris, Richard Dawkins, Daniel Dennett, and the late Christopher Hitchens really require further reinforcement? British philosopher A.C. Grayling must think so, since that is precisely what his latest book, The God Argument, aims to provide. Grayling is mistaken. The style of atheism rehearsed in these books has reached a dead end. It's one thing to catalog the manifest faults within this or that religious tradition, which the new atheists have ably done over and over and over again. It's quite another to claim, as these authors invariably do, that the godlessness is not only true, but also unambiguously good for human beings. And so, okay, here we go. There is one thing that I agree here. Do we need a series? I think about agreeing with, and I want to get your opinion of this, is I think we have a lot of books that really make the case that, that religion is a destructive force. And I think most of us sitting, I think we agree.
Sure. Yeah.
I think there's even religious people that agree that there are certain aspects of religion that are destructive.
Right. Do we need another one of these books? Do we need to keep sort of writing the same type of things just from slightly different angles?
Yeah, I look at that kind of like I look at textbooks. There's always new thoughts that come out. There are reasons to update, but that's not usually the case. Usually there's sort of a republish or a rehash of the same sort of ideas.
Yeah.
They put it in a modern packaging for, shiny new, brand new 2013. But if it's really just sort of the same ideas, all they're really doing is using the shiny package to recruit new people to the idea.
I actually don't mind the shiny package at all. I mean, you have different sort of generations of people and thinkers that are exposed to different things and receive information in different ways. The examples in my Spanish language textbook from 1982 that's still sitting in my classroom is terrible. Nobody knows who Julio Iglesias is, let alone Enrique Iglesias, because, right. You know, he's passé at this point. And so I don't mind at all having a shiny new packaging to convey new information or engage new thinkers.
And sort of that's my take on this, is as long as we can keep making the same arguments, and we keep having to make the same arguments,
sure.
Because the arguments aren't being heard.
Right.
The people are still making the same ridiculous Pascal's wager type arguments, all the same stuff that we've seen. Not a lot has changed there, but what I'm concerned with is, and this is exactly what you guys visit, and I assume this is what A.C. Grayling is doing, is we're providing a new context. We're putting new data. We're giving a different thing on it. Because if we make these arguments and then we just keep referring to the same books, those books essentially become our Bible, which is something we need to avoid. We need to look not at just at literature, but at the data, essentially.
I think that's a very compelling response, and I have to say I'll have to rethink my thoughts on the matter.
Okay. So what he does say here is that whether or not godlessness is unambiguously good. And I'm not comfortable with saying that being without religion is unambiguously good. I will say that it's good and it's definitely a worthwhile thing to do. But are there problems with it? Potentially.
Sure. Recently I lost a loved one, and going through the grieving process, knowing that for all practical purposes, as far as right here on earth goes, that this was the end of that loved one.
Yeah.
That's hard.
It's hard to say that we've got it all right.
Right.
But what he's trying to suggest here is that it's unambiguously bad, which I won't follow. And he says, if atheism is true, it is far from being good news. Learning that we're alone in the universe, that no one hears or answers our prayers, that humanity is entirely the product of random events, and that we have no more intrinsic dignity than non-human or even non-animate clumps of matter, that we face certain annihilation and death, that our sufferings are ultimately pointless, that our lives and loves do not matter at all in the larger sense, that those who commit horrific evils and elude human punishment get away with their crimes. I'm scot-free. All of this is utterly tragic.
You know, this is reminding me kind of what Dennis Prager said in light of the Sandy Hook shootings, when he was criticizing Susan Jacoby for saying, hey, you know what, atheists do have something to say to comfort parents who have lost their children. And he said, you know, there is nothing that's comforting. If you really were being honest, you should just admit that your philosophy and life, vision is tragic. And the other thing here, he says, if atheism is true. Now, he's trying to say really here, if there is no God,
yeah.
If that premise is true. But atheism in and of itself is just saying, I don't believe that this God exists, or
atheism, as we talk about on the show, is what is our definition of atheism on the show? It's
no God.
God. So in this case, atheism can be evaluated for truth or falsity.
Okay.
Sure. And I think part of what he's saying here is that he's saying sort of that that it all sort of means nothing.
Yeah.
And well, scientifically, I would kind of agree with him that as far as the base state of the beginning of this is that, yeah, it doesn't actually mean anything, but that's where it falls on us as human beings to make it matter.
This is where it falls apart to me. And he references, Woody Allen, who calls himself God's loyal opposition. He references, Camus a lot. He references a lot of philosophers and a lot of, thinkers. And maybe this is a situation where maybe there's just something about philosophy that the problem is with me. Like, maybe there's some sort of thing that I don't get it. Maybe I'm just too functionalist. I don't know. And I actually would invite, the author of this column, Damon Linker, who did write some very good books. If he hears this, I would, if you want to show me where I'm wrong, I'd like to hear it. But my problem is I don't even see these things as problems.
Right.
I don't. Let's take it from the top. That we're no one hears the answers to our prayers, that humanity is entirely the product of random events, and that there's no intrinsic dignity. It seems like these are problems that were invented to make religion work. And when we talk about Camus and we talk about Woody Allen and we talk about these philosophers who are in the recent past or even in the present, these are people who are in a time and place, either mentally or actually in time, where they're just coming out of religion, where they're sort of stepping away from it. Woody Allen specifically, Camus specifically, they grew up in a significantly more sectarian world that I grew up in. And so that these things are meaningful to them. And from my external perspective, I have a completely different take. If there is no intrinsic meaning to the universe, then it is our job to provide intrinsic meaning to ourselves. Why do we need a paternalistic, autocratic leader to tell us what they do, what to do? It seems like in that case, it makes us that thing, which seems to his perspective, makes him seem grander, to me, makes us feel less. It makes me feel like we're supposed to be, that people are complaining that we're not being treated like school children.
I think the idea behind creating your own dignity and creating your own meaning is incredibly empowering. And when groups of people can get together and understand how to do that and sort of societally decide on that, that really is such a collaborative effort. And it's not, you know, like what you were saying, this sort of paternalistic top-down thing going on where you have no voice in your own dignity and your own humanity.
Yeah, he goes on to write, to reject religion does not merely entail facing our finitude without comforting illusions. It also involves the denial of something noble. It is perfectly fitting, Larkin seems to say, for an atheist to lament his lack of belief in God, who bestows metaphysical meaning on the full range of human desires and experiences. It's just... I think what Linker here isn't doing is he isn't really explaining. He's just pointing to other philosophers, specifically Camus and you know, Larkin here, to say, look, there are these problems that atheism doesn't address. And what I'm saying is that, to me, these aren't problems. I mean, I said it again, but you need if you want me to believe that this thing exists, I need to know that these are problems, and I don't think that argument is being made. What he seems to be saying is... You know, is he's trying to make the God-shaped hole argument, right, that if atheists were honest with themselves and honest with other people, they would recognize that they have this God-shaped hole in their life and that they need to fill that, and because they're atheists, they are missing this essential thing. I thought I had that as a kid, and I went on a search to find it, and in that search I discovered that I was trying to fill something that I didn't really need, that I wasn't missing. I wasn't missing any of this thing. You know, it's I like the idea that, as we have always done, human morality, human dignity, all of these things we have always done ourselves. We like to pretend that there's some, you know, that there's some God or some guy who's putting a check or check minus on our grading, you know, but sure. The fact of the matter is, it has always been us.
Speaking of grading, Sam, but if we only teach touch typing and block printing, how will children ever learn cursive?
Right. Exactly. What good, I mean, every, you know, people who like writing and they lament the loss of cursive. What was cursive for? Cursive was specifically for writing quickly. We have faster ways to write now.
That's true.
I think cursive is outmoded.
Faster ways to communicate via writing that are more easily discernible than individual cursive penmanship.
Yeah, I don't...
It's like the prescription problem.
So, if you're the author of this column, or you're someone who believes this way, and you have a background in philosophy, I would really like to be convinced, because sometimes, I read Camus, I read philosophers, and it just seems like there's something I'm not getting. Maybe I'm stupid. I'm willing to admit that. But it just seems, like I said, it just seems like these problems aren't problems. And rather than being dishonest, I see myself as someone just further down the line, a future, you know, not in, you know, a future social evolution. I'm a little farther away from it. And so I don't see these problems as problems. I see humanity coming up with morality, cause, and reason for ourselves. And I think we've always done it this way. And I think it's good. I like it. I think it's beautiful. I think it's wonderful. Why don't, you know, if the universe provides no intrinsic meaning, let's find some.
I'd say we can take a page out of the book of the Sphinx from the movie Mystery Men.
Oh, boy.
That if you are searching for meaning, you will find that the meaning is the search.
I've heard that, too. But I think when you have to look at that, you have to look at the... You have to look at what you're searching for and sort of the place you're coming from when you search it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when people who search for the Fountain of Youth, everybody's, you know, like, oh, the search for the Fountain of Youth is a laudable goal. Is it really? He just wants to be young so he can be hot and get chicks. Who
right.
cares, right? I mean, that's not a good place to have a conversation from.
Yeah, I mean, there's something that can be very motivating about a search, and I think that a lot of humans are really driven by this search and this goal without necessarily an end point as the goal, but the actual process of going through things. And part of that determining our own more, you know, our own sort of a human common dignity and reason for being is part of that.
Yeah. I mean, this obviously stuck in my craw a little bit. I don't know if you noticed that I kind of got a little bit heated there. But the other side of it is these are the conversations I like having. There's a, you know, like a conversation we had on Facebook earlier this week where somebody asked me, well, Jesus said we're all, you know, suffering. And because we don't, you know, because we don't believe in Jesus, we're suffering. And the Bible says this is true. What do you think of that? I'm like, well,
that's a little tiresome. It's a little tiresome.
We've all heard it. And it's just, okay, that's, you know, here's your answer. Here's the answer that every atheist has been giving for the last 50 years. This is more nuanced. This is the kind of debate I like having. So I do get into it.
Okay, so I got to take a break here. I completely forgot to do any announcements. The problem with the guy who's in charge of the flow of the show getting all ranty is that he tends to lose control of the flow of this show. So I am at the post show. I pulled out my weird USB microphone, and I'm recording a segment. I'll prove it to you. Hang on. Say hey, everybody.
Hi.
Yeah, see? Not joking. I am at the bar with a drink in my hand. So here's what's going on. First things first, the Tri-City Freethinkers are hosting Shelley Siegel as she plays her way across the Pacific Northwest in April. She'll be at Zinful Panini Grill and Wine Bar in Kennewick on Saturday, April 13th, starting at 6 p.m. You can find more information at tricityfreethinkers.org. And I'm sorry for not getting to that sooner. Second, Humanists of Washington is having a button design contest. They're working on new button designs. Humanists sells or donates buttons in order to raise awareness of humanism, Humanists of Washington, and raise money for the organization, including the Humanist Center Fund. For more information, check humanistsofwashington.org later this week. And there's a second round of announcements. Get to them in a moment.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. I do like the new music.
Yeah, it's good.
And in a minute, we're going to have a conversation with Mandisa Thomas of Black Nonbelievers.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Billy! Billy! I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode!
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
Come to the 2013 NFA Conference. The 2013 Northwest Freethought Alliance Conference will be held at Portland State University April 5th through April 7th. Principal speakers include Dr. Daryl Ray, author of Sex and God, How Religion Destroys Sexuality, Hemet Mehta of The Friendly Atheist, Dr. Valerie Tirico, author of Trusting Doubt, and Australian singer-songwriter Shelley Siegel, fresh off the release of her new record, An Atheist Album. Go to nwfreethought.org to register and learn more. Again, that's nwfreethought.org.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And yay, about 2 years ago, on I think our first or second season on the air, something really silly happened with a cable access show. But there was a silver lining there. As we talked to somebody who was really fun and had a lot of, you know, who gave us a lot of really good info and a lot of background on stuff we didn't have before. So we felt it was time to catch up. And Mandisa Thomas is an African-American atheist activist based in Atlanta. Mandisa works to encourage more blacks to come out and stand strong with their non-belief in the face of strong religious overtones. She was featured alongside Langston Hughes on a billboard for African-Americans for Humanism and was recently appointed to a board position with Foundation Beyond Belief. We spoke with Mandisa in June 2011, and she had just begun the organization Black Non-Believers Incorporated. Welcome back, Mandisa. How you doing?
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me back. Glad to be here.
Oh, great. So when we talked to you guys before, it was Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta. Now it's Black Nonbelievers. It looks like there's a lot of growth going on in the organization. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I most certainly will. The reason why we shortened the name to Black Nonbelievers Incorporated was because there was interest in establishing BN groups in different cities. We now have, there are affiliated groups in the cities of Chicago, Orlando, and now Dallas, which is headed up by Alex Jules, who was also featured in the Billboard campaign with African Americans for Humanism, as well as in an article in Ebony Magazine. So we're excited about the level of enthusiasm and the fact that there are now more blacks that are coming out, and there's interest in groups that focus on helping more African American atheists.
That sounds so exciting. I mean, do you have contacts with regular contact with the organizers of these groups, or do you provide support? Are you formally networked?
Yes, we are formally networked. I do stay in touch with the organizers of these specific groups. We do offer support for each other, advice as to what we can do in our areas, if there are any referrals or references, and information that can be shared. Not just with those groups, but also other groups in the area, because one thing that I hold as important is to communicate with as many groups as possible for the opportunities to work together. So, yes, but we do have that system where we definitely, try to stay uniform to an extent of what it is that we do, how we reach out to those in our communities, and we definitely help each other with that.
To that end, a few weeks ago, we had a conversation with Donald Wright, who created the Day of Solidarity with Black Nonbelievers. So, is that, and you guys participated in that? How did that work out, and how did that participation begin?
Well, it was great. When I first connected with Donald, it was on an online show, a couple of shows where he was interviewed, and I definitely felt it was important to participate, especially for Atlanta. It's been nationwide, but now we have more participation from different cities, and the gatherings have just been phenomenal. We actually first participated in 2012. That was our first Day of Solidarity, and I wrote a blog about it for the Friendly Atheist. And the premise is to basically try to get more atheists, primarily of color, but not exclusively, to come out and meet in person. Because the online presence is stronger now, but the offline presence needs to be just as strong, and that is what primarily, because BN, that's what we are about, is engaging in person. Celebrating the Day of Solidarity was only natural. It was only right to do so.
So your website states BN welcomes all regardless of sex, sexuality, gender, identity, age, national origin, or race. We extend a caring embrace to all who wish to participate in exploring a meaningful, rational life. Along that, do you have many attendees or members who are not black?
Actually, we do. Not as many as I would hope for, but we do let everyone know that everyone is welcome. We make that very, very clear. And we have quite a few participants that aren't black in our online forums. We've had some to come out in person, and they always feel very comfortable. So, and that's one thing I definitely I champion that as well, is that we must be welcoming. And I think that is something that is being worked on in the community, in the free thought community, but it is still lacking. But I definitely champion making sure that everyone does feel welcome, especially offline.
What are some of the events that people would be welcomed into? I mean, what are the kinds of activities that Black Nonbelievers does in the Atlanta area?
Okay, every third Sunday of the month, we host our general meetings, which was the exception. We have few exceptions, Of course, last month was the Day of Solidarity General Meeting, which took place on the fourth Sunday. But our general meetings are held every third Sunday of the month in various areas. We also do sponsor a Recovering from Religion support group on every second Saturday of the month. We also host movie nights, bowling nights, and we may have special lectures, which we keep everyone updated on. So any of these events, everyone is welcome to. If we do something special, like sometimes we may do like a mother-daughter night or something with the children. Even though everyone would be welcome to that, we may try to tailor certain events to certain demographics. But the majority of the events are open to everyone.
I think it's really neat seeing that there are a lot more family events sort of at our sort of atheist and free thought social, you know, venues that are popping up, something to you know, incorporate and open to everyone. You've got an event coming up the end of this month that's coinciding with the American Atheist Annual Convention. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, absolutely. Last year, Ben hosted a Reason Rally after party, which did feature Graydon Square, which was a huge success. This year, we wanted to feature affiliated BN artists and lyricists that are, because there are quite a few in the community. And there's also going to be a comedian named Steve Hill that will be there. And because, you know, we've kind of, I wouldn't say kind of, but, you know, social events are our thing, and because I'm such a huge music lover, and this is what I do. So we wanted to do something a little bit different this year and feature an affiliated creative artist, and it's called the Free Thought Jam, and we will be having a lot of fun. The featured MC is MC Brooks, a very talented young man. Be sure to check him out. And we just want to have, you know, we want to make sure that we're having a good time. We're going to have, you know, provide a nice alternative to the other events that, even though I'm sure they will be great, we want to put the party in the purpose.
Nice.
We're kind of the same way. We've done a lot of, you know, when we raise money for the show and do events like that, we've done comedy, we've done music. I think that's, we do a lot of lectures and speeches and stuff like that. And I think that's important given the scientific basis of what we're doing. But
right.
we need to focus on the art and the community and the joy that brings to a community. And this is the kind of stuff that I'm in the community for, is stuff like this. It's really great to hear somebody's of the same mind there.
Yes, absolutely.
So, Mandisa, have you, you know, you've gotten a lot of sort of positive response to your, you know, organization, and others have been featured in sort of different black media. I mean, Jet Magazine and Ebony. But have you ever encountered any resistance or interference from religious individuals or from churches?
At this time, you know, ironically, I was recently featured on a Blog Talk radio show with a pastor out of Mississippi, and he was actually pretty progressive, and I thought that was pretty good. On the individual nature, though, I have had some primarily older black women who have contacted me and said that they could not believe that I didn't believe in a God, and that they were praying for my soul, especially after reading the Chet article. We still have some resistance as far as the race-focused groups from others, from primarily other whites in the free thought community, who don't seem to understand why there's a need for black groups or groups that identify as such.
That was something that sort of occurred to me, if you'd had any pushback from the free thought community, because I know that Mr. Wright had gotten some pushback for the Day of Solidarity. What's sort of your response to that?
Well, my response is that when you are so, you know, when you're in a community where, unfortunately, people tend to not even, I don't think, identify as, you know, they hold their religion as sort of, you know, an elitist position, and that are just so engrossed in it, and it takes over their entire being, and thinks that everyone else, everyone, when it is assumed that everyone is black is a Christian, not just by other whites, but other blacks, there it becomes a need to identify and to let others know that they are not alone, that there are black atheists in our community and that it is diverse. So it's not that it's a separation issue, but I mean, I encourage them to dig deeper into the issues in certain communities to understand why we have to do this.
Well put. I think that's what we need is we need to build these identities within the community.
Absolutely. Along those lines, in your experience, how is one of your events or discussion boards or one of your groups different from one based merely on humanism, atheism, or free thought without the racial or ethnic focus?
I would say that the main difference is basically that, you know, you see some of these crazy, I don't know if you've ever like interacted with the black church and such, but I mean, to us, of course, it is ridiculous how some of these people carry on. I mean, if you thought the white evangelical Christian community was bad, the black evangelical community is worse. And
wow.
It's almost like it is a, you know, it really is a dog and pony show. I mean, it's almost like a comedy routine. And, you know, we tend to kind of look at, you know, we tend to kind of make mock it a little bit and make fun of it. You know, that comes with the territory.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, too, when it comes to the major preoccupation where people don't go to see doctors and they don't seek professional help, because they're past, because they're giving all of their faith to the church and all of their, putting all their trust in the church, this is something that we do discuss because it does affect families. And it really does. I would think, I'm pretty sure that in the overall free thought community that there are relationship challenges with especially spouses where one is a believer and one isn't. But we definitely see quite a bit of that in our groups as well, where they have to, where members have to contend with spouses that are religious, and that it really does majorly affect their relationships.
So we've got a situation here which I haven't really managed to do before, but we actually have a caller specifically for you, Mandisa. So
okay.
This is Crystal from Greensboro, North Carolina. I'd like to bring her in. Are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, Mandisa, are you still with us? Yeah. See. Okay.
I think we're gonna try and get Mandisa back on the.
If we can get Mandisa back on the
line. But Crystal, go ahead and ask your question.
Well, I was calling because I think Mandisa knows that I recently attended. I started a group on Meetup called Black Atheists of the Triad, North Carolina, encompassing Greensboro, North Carolina, where I'm from. And we saw a large thrust of new members. We actually have 16 members. And I started the group 3 weeks ago. But, you know, we've had 2 meetings already, and only 2 or 3 people have shown up at each meeting. And I just wanted to know what she would recommend as far as, you know, a core meetup to have, because I wasn't sure. I didn't want to be, like, you know, just surrounding them with memes about why you should not like Jesus or stuff like that. And, you know, we did participate in the Day of Solidarity at the last minute. And then we went out last week for drinking. But, I mean, I want to know what they want to do, but no one seems to be responding to my messages. And, you know, there's 2 or 3 really active members in the group, but then everyone else, you know, hasn't shown up since they joined. So I just don't know what to do in order to, you know, make the group be productive and a place where they can all feel comfortable and enjoy the meetup.
So, Mandisa, are you with us now?
Yes, I'm back.
Okay, so did you hear the question? It's a question of community involvement.
Yes. Hi, Crystal. You're out of Greensboro, right? You're in group. Yeah. Okay. Great. I did see that. And first, let me tell you, please do not give up. It can be very organizing, and getting people together can be extremely frustrating. I know firsthand about that. And so, I would say to just continue to. If there are activities that you like in particular, don't be afraid to schedule anything that you may like. Everything doesn't necessarily have to be activism based, but it can also, it can be socially based, and it will take some time. And also, please be sure to reach out. I can make sure that I feature your group on our website. I can put it on our website to make sure that more traffic does come to your group. And I can reach out to other, the primary focus for me is to try to help other groups as much as possible so that the word can get out. And you'll have, one thing you'll find, and I'm pretty sure, Rebecca, Mike, and Sam, that you get this as well, is that you have people who will say they'll come, but then they don't show. Unfortunately, I don't think there's much we can do about that except to just keep pushing and just to continue to do what it is that we do, because it will grow. It may take some time, but, you know, just if there are any events that, or don't be afraid to also collaborate or incorporate other events into some meeting, you know, some of your events. For example, if you know that a larger organization is going to be featuring someone, you can schedule a meetup around that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can get your name out that way as well. So if there are other opportunities that present itself to incorporate with other events, then that would be great as well.
Okay, well, thank you.
I hope that was helpful.
Oh, yeah, it was. Thank you so much, Mandita.
Right, you're welcome.
Thank you very much. We have this problem too, as you pointed out. We do meetups, we do stuff like that, and we, you know, our usual participation is roughly about 10% of you know, the people who sign up. And there's two things that we do. One thing is we try to do, as you're doing, you know, a wide array of different things to attract different people, to figure out what people's interests are. We ask people what they want to do. And the other thing we do is Ask an Atheist. We want to highlight communities like this, and we're actually planning on spending more time talking about community organizations throughout the country and what they're, because we do get a lot of questions from people who are saying, I live in this part of town, what can I do? And then, you know, we send them links, but we've decided that it's necessary to do this publicly. So, Mandisa, if there's any way we can be of assistance as what there is of Atheist Media, you know, we're here. And that's okay. Part of what I feel like the job is.
Yes. Yes. It, you know, communication and, you know, referrals and sharing information is going to be extremely important. But what I also stress is important as well is for people to actually get out and look at what, you know, at the groups that are doing stuff. You have people who say that they can't find it, but I have to ask the question, are they really looking? Because
right.
If you really look, you can find at least one free thinking group in most major cities in the United States.
Yeah.
They're out there. And they're not just, and that's one of the reasons why in my last presentation in Indiana, you know, I titled it, Don't Just Talk About It, Be About It, because there are so many of us that really are out there trying to offer that support and also making people aware of the activists, you know, the support groups, you know, the groups that are focused more on education and such. So there's an array of diversity out there, and not only are we responsible for making sure people know it, there's also a responsibility on people to find it.
So to that end, where would, if people want to know more, where would you like them to go?
They can go to, of course, our website, www.blacknonbelievers.org. There we do have a resources page, media and resources, where we list different affiliated groups, blogs, different websites, different books, and other information that where people can find more and, you know, and where people can look further and hopefully perhaps join in person. Or if they just want to do some independent research for their own development, that information is there as well. And I think I have your information on our website, too. I will make sure I double-check that to be sure, because we also, BN is affiliated with American Atheists, African Americans to Humanism, and other larger groups, so that we're able to all find each other, and, again, which is extremely important.
I think so, too. Mandisa Thomas is one of the founders of Black Non-Believers Incorporated and is recently appointed to the board of Foundation Beyond Belief. Thank you very much for your time, Mandisa.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
I look forward to talking to you again.
Hi, it's me. I'm back again, and I'm still at the bar. So, the rest of the announcements. First, Camp Quest Northwest is seeking counselor applicants. If you heard our Camp Quest Northwest episode, you know how amazing it was to be there, to be a part of it. And if you would like to be a part of it, you can go to campquestnorthwest.org and apply to be a counselor. And you'll get to meet some incredible people, including a fair number of people who have been on Ask an Atheist. Second, if you want to be a part of the Ask an Atheist listener poll, your time is running out. I'm close to having the sample I need, and so if you want your voice, go to poll.askanatheist.tv and let us know what you think. All questions are declinable, debatable, and we love feedback. But if you want to be a part of it, get to it as soon as you can. And finally, I really want to thank everybody who's been participating in Peggy's Challenge. I'd like to thank James from Chandler, Arizona, which is incidentally where I bought my first Power Mac, Richard from Hawthorne, California, and Scott, once again, from Langley, BC. How you doing? Thank you all. Without your help, we would not have a show, and I wouldn't have to do post-show stuff at a bar. Anyway, sorry I didn't do the announcements during the show. I hope this didn't take the enjoyment out of the episode. We'll talk to you guys next week, and here's the rest of the episode.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back, we're going to take some more calls. Yes, it's Polka. And we'll have a little bit of a science discussion. Kind of a moment of science, kind of not.
So what does everybody want to play?
Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
All right, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the Universal Decay rules, a variation on our usual fantasy campaign system. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm going to be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shape-shifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, as well as a listing of other products and to get involved in the community forums.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
Come to the 2013 NFA Conference. The 2013 Northwest Freethought Alliance Conference will be held at Portland State University April 5th through April 7th. Principal speakers include Dr. Daryl Ray, author of Sex and God, How Religion Destroys Sexuality, Hemet Mehta of The Friendly Atheist, Dr. Valerie Tirico, author of Trusting Doubt, and Australian singer-songwriter Shelley Siegel, fresh off the release of her new record, An Atheist Album. Go to nwfreethought.org to register and learn more. Again, that's nwfreethought.org.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back! This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And we've got a caller that refers back to the earlier conversation about philosophy. This is, I believe, our regular caller, Cheryl. How you doing today?
Pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good. So, what do you have for us?
Well, anyway, yeah, as I understood what I heard of the opening segment, you were talking about philosophy and debating the question of whether it is, whether atheism can be validly criticized for not providing meaning to people's lives. Do I have that correct?
Right.
Okay. Well, it's my position that it is intellectually dishonest to adopt a belief that you're not really convinced of to serve some other end, such as to provide meaning to your life, you know? I think that the only really intellectually honest reason to believe anything is because the evidence that you've been presented has been sufficiently convincing to you.
I have to agree with you there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it would be just as dishonest for an atheist to adopt a religion to provide meaning to their lives as it would be for a Christian to reject, or a theist to reject religion or a belief in God in order to punish religion or for some other reason.
Yeah, I would definitely go along with that. I mean, it's it just seems like when people tell us that we have, you know, that when we become an atheist and when we move away from it, we automatically lose all this meaning. It suggests that they have answers to a lot of questions, which I don't think are necessarily answered, and are in fact the very questions that we're sort of challenging when we choose to become non-theists. And I think you're right. We shouldn't make decisions about how we believe in the, you know, about things in the universe because we're trying to stick it to somebody or because we're, you know, just out of a sense of rebellion. In the case of atheism, most of us are atheists and most of us have moved in this direction not because we're all intellectual teenagers, but because we've seen the results of religion and we've also seen the evidence of science, and that becomes the basis for our meaning versus, versus where people who are religious derive their meaning.
Oh, okay, yeah. Religion, I tend to separate it from a belief in God. I mean, religion is a way of practicing that belief or something, and you know, there's different religions or whatever. It's possible to believe in God and not to practice any particular religion, and vice versa. It's possible to practice religion and really not believe in God.
Quite so.
But I would think that, you know, in my personal opinion, if I were convinced that God exists, which I happen to be, then whether or not he provided meaning to my life would be completely incidental. You know, I couldn't say, well, I don't see any additional meaning in my life, therefore God must not exist.
Right.
You know, the evidence has to be enough to convince me, apart from any meaning or, you know, personal enhancement or anything like that.
Yeah, I think I really laud you for you know, looking for meaning on your own merits rather than just accepting somebody else's meaning. I do respect that, and that's kind of what I'm aiming for too. So Cheryl, thank you very much for your call. Look forward to talking to you again.
Likewise, thank you.
Thank you. So,
you know, one of the things that's really puzzling to me is the thing that Cheryl was referring to in terms of someone who's an atheist that becomes a theist precisely to find that meaning in their life. And this actually happened kind of recently in sort of the atheist blogosphere with a blogger, Leah Labresco, who decided, no, I don't have that basis for morality and meaning in my life, and so I'm going to intentionally adopt a religion to do so. It's kind of puzzling to me.
So you're actually sitting in the host chair today, so I can't just tell you to take it away, but we do have a moment of science, sort of a moment of science in situ. So
we do, yeah. So a couple of days ago, one of our listeners, Saber Smith, sent me a question with a grotesque picture of a very unfortunate tarantula that had succumbed to an infection of the Cordyceps genus fungus. These fungi are known to change the behaviors of their hosts. Saber wrote.
She wrote, "Hi Dan," or he wrote, "Hi Dan, I was wondering if you could shed some light on how the parasitic fungi in this article use mind control on their arachnid hosts. How does a simple fungus force another animal to do its bidding?"
That is a really cool question, Saber. That's really a good one. So Cordyceps fungi like this one are known to parasitize ants and other arthropods as well, but the best known of these fungi is probably the Ophiocordyceps unilateralis, which has been in the news lately for being the zombie ant fungus. I'm not sure exactly how a fungus like this would affect mind control on its host, but it's important to remember that brains and nervous systems are made of nerve cells, which are very highly specialized, but they follow the same rules as the other cells in our bodies. So they send and receive messages to and from other cells in the body in order to affect changes, and whether those changes result in an organism-level feeling of hunger or a compulsion to mate, they all start the same way, with chemical signals. So the Cordyceps genus controls its host via those very methods. It infects the host and secretes signals, in this case nerve toxins, into the animal, which compel it to carry out certain very simple behaviors. Beyond that, it's very complicated, not very well understood, and involves numerous proteins, enzymes, and RNA suppressors at different stages of the infection, but despite the zombie name, voodoo is probably not a major player in the Cordyceps life cycle. While cordyceps are really cool, there are certainly other parasites that use analogs, sort of the same kind of mind control on their hosts, not the least of which is the rabies virus. Rabies initially infects muscle tissue at the site of a bite, but it soon moves to the brain and then the spinal cord, and there it can use its host to become aggressive. The host actually becomes sort of erratic and has strange behavior. So while the virus is simultaneously spreading the infection from the brain to the salivary glands, it's increasing the chance that its host will bite. It's making the host aggressive and moving right to the mouth to aid transmission. It's not too bad for a simple virus, right? Another really cool one is the single-celled parasite called Toxoplasma gondii, which infects both cats and rodents as part of its life cycle. It seems to be pretty harmless to the cat, but it causes rodents to have reduced motor skills and to be sexually attracted to the smell of cat urine. Yes, sexually attracted. Toxoplasma is pretty common in indoor-outdoor cats and makes cleaning the cat's litter box a risk worth considering for women who are pregnant, since this parasite can cause deafness in the unborn child. Weird, right? Well, it gets a little bit weirder. While toxoplasma makes rodents significantly more reckless regarding their feline predators, recent studies support that it may also affect changes in humans. Infected men seem to get more reckless and suspicious, while infected women seem to become more loving and extroverted, but both suffer a decrease in motor skills. Super weird! But wait, humans aren't eaten by felines, so why would it affect us and not just rodents? The answer to this one, like so many other Moment of Science themes, may stem back to our primate past. For much of our evolution, Sam, what was our primary predator?
Other big mammals, big cats?
Big cats, of course. So why? Why does it always come back to big cats? They have been one of the biggest forces on our evolution throughout all of it. Do you guys want to say this with me?
Do I? Sure.
Yes, please.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Lions and fungus and protists. Oh, my.
Yes, indeed.
I'm Dan Lombardo, and I hope you enjoyed this moment of science.
If you have a science-based question and would like us to take a crack at it, you can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the red, shiny, candy-like button, and let us know, and we'll try and cover it in a future moment of science. So there's sort of a direction that I want to go in. It's a little bit different because it's politically based and it's different and it's weirding me out a little bit. So this is more for folks who are listening to the radio show, and it's in line with what Ask an Atheist does. Is recently the president of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, died. And given that KLAY has a lot of liberal based talk shows on it, I was talking about it with Mike, and Becky and I actually do follow Venezuelan politics a little bit, basically because, I'll be honest with you, the state-controlled media there is hilarious.
Yeah, Sam really tends to like his propaganda, and I'm a Spanish speaker, and I like listening to, different kinds of, Spanish media from around the world, and it's really interesting sort of looking at the difference between how the media, English language, U.S. media covers Venezuela, how the Spanish language media based in the U.S. covers Venezuela, and how looking at that Channel 8, the national Venezuelan media outlet, really sort of props up Venezuela and props up Chavez. You have things like people regularly going on to call him not just comandante, not just libertador, but salvador. Yeah. Not just my commander, not just my liberator, but my savior.
The actual savior of Venezuela. They're giving it, and they give it a clear religious overtone.
Definitely.
This is not the kind of socialism that was in the USSR. This is not an explicitly atheistic, socialism. He's gone on the radio and said, or on television and said, Christianity and socialism, they can get along, and goes a long way towards it. And then people talk about him like he's a quasi-religious figure.
Thus saith the Pharaoh.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Chavez had no shortage of, different tensions between the Catholic Church, between the Jewish community in Venezuela, but he's not an atheistic socialist leader. He does not enforce nor want to enforce that for his, country, but certainly sort of taking on that role of sort of the Christ figure is absolutely apparent in the comments, especially from the youth movements in the country, and especially in the wake of his death.
We're not getting a U.S. government spin. We're not getting a Fox News spin. We're not getting a conservative spin on this. We are looking at the very the media controlled by Hugo Chavez and his government. This is their spin. This is what they want to present to the world, and that's what we're seeing. And it scared me. And when he died, a lot of people were saying, you know, oh, it's a shame that he's dead. He did so much for his people. You know, he was a great liberator of the poor.
Atheists included.
Atheists humanists. Included, as may be. So comes the question, what does this have to do with Ask an Atheist? And what does this, and why are we even bothering to take time out to talk about this? The answer is skepticism. The thing here is where people are saying, well, he did these things, I like these things, therefore he's good. Let's talk about some of the other things that he's done. He told Jorge Ramos in Univision in 1998 regarding an open press, enough already with state media. The state already has Channel 8. I have a great relationship with other channels. They should remain private. In fact, we're interested in their expanding and deepening. That said, he limited freedom of the press despite 1999 constitutions emphasizing free press. And this has been noticed by Freedom House, Human Rights Watch, and Reporters Without Borders. He closed radio stations. He refused to renew the license of Radio Caracas Television, the main opposition voice to his presidency. So he said he was willing for an open press. He said he was interested in open press. But everything he actually did seemed to suggest to me that an open press wasn't interesting to him. And he made significant attempts to expand the socially, the government central controlled media. There was originally one state-owned television station. Now there are three state-owned television.
And there's the internet-based outlets regarding it. It's expanded to lots of different sort of areas in terms of just different communication media. It's quite apparent to a Spanish speaker, and it is a little bit difficult to navigate when you're not a speaker of that language or someone who reads in the language. But it's very pervasive. And the whole sort of just unthinking adoration of Chavez was always very apparent to me when looking at Venezuelan media.
Yeah. So whether or not and here's the thing, is what it looks like to me, and this is the problem with me, and this is why this transcends politics for me, is it sounds like, to me, the liberal version of what they said about Mussolini and Pinochet, which was essentially he made the trains run on time. Is that despite he did all of these really terrible things,
right,
he did this good stuff for the poor, too. So you're willing to give up freedom of expression. You're willing to give up freedom of the press. You're willing to let a guy who just sort of by the back door says a couple of anti-Semitic things. You're letting him in the door because he happens to do a couple things that you like. If you're an atheist, that's not skepticism. That's not what it looks like. This is somebody asked me if we got an email once that said, "Do you apply skepticism to areas outside of religion and science?" And here you are. This is it. And I told you it would get me into trouble. Me and Mike were talking about it, and the result of our conversation was so much respect has been lost just listening to people. Because I got political friends all over the spectrum, because I'm kind of politically all over the spectrum. And when people say how awesome, and they do image macros for how awesome Hugo Chavez was, and then I look at the media, and they're basically turning into, like, Kim Jong-il light, I feel like some skepticism is missing.
If there's one little thing that should also pique your skepticism detector, some of the stuff that Chavez himself says is absolutely ridiculous. Dan, you want to talk about his what he thinks about life on Mars?
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. He said, "I have always heard that it would not be strange that there had been civilization on Mars, but maybe capitalism arrived there, imperialism arrived, and finished off the planet."
Now, he might have been joking, but this is the basis on which he founded, you know, his new government, on which he extended his presidency. These kind of hints, you know, it's the official Venezuelan line that maybe the U.S. poisoned Chavez with cancer.
Yes, yeah. Maduro, his vice president that is now running to take over the presidency, asserts that, yes, the CIA planted cancer in Latin America, specifically in Chavez.
Yeah.
And where's your skepticism there?
It looks like, he looks a lot less like some socialist liberator, and it looks a lot more like Pinochet, just with a different philosophy and with his focus on a different group of people. We can't do what we do here at Ask an Atheist if there's state-controlled media. We can't do what we do on Facebook in situations like that. I don't care if it's in favor of socialism, in favor of religion. It's wrong either way. So that's all the time we've got for today. My name was Sam Olvey. With me was Rebecca Friedman and Dan Lombardo. Thank you very much, Mandisa Thomas. Our music was by Chris Coleman, Phil Whitfield, and Steve Siemens. Post-show is at 1111 11th Street at 5 p.m. Ask an Atheist is an NEDM media production. You can see us at AskAnAtheistTV.tv. Blah. See you next week.